We hear in today's gospel, Jesus said to his apostles, "As you go, make this proclamation. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, drive out demons. Without cost you have received, without cost you are to give. Do not take gold or silver or copper for your belts, no sack for the journey, or a second tunic, or sandals, or walking stick. The laborer deserves his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, look for a worthy person in it and stay there until you leave. As you enter a house, wish it peace." And so, that's something for us to think about. What is Jesus saying to the apostles? Jesus is basically instituting them as servant leaders. In our church, we consider the bishops who lead the diocese and have other authority in the church, including the Pope, to be the successors of the apostles. And really, they should regard themselves as servant leaders, one who is other-focused. That means essentially that we should not be worried when we have authority in the church, on whatever level, on what our responsibility is, unless it is focused on the other. We shouldn't worry about status in terms of having the finest accommodations. We shouldn't worry about being greeted with fanfare as if we were a king, a ruler, a famous general or admiral. We should be servant leaders. I saw a trailer the other night for an upcoming movie about Napoleon, focusing on his start. I really don't know much of his history. I just know that the Battle of Waterloo was also a birthday of a few famous people, including Sir Paul McCartney. But reflecting on this gospel and reflecting on the servant leadership of the church, I think we could say that Napoleon was not a good example of that. In fact, he would have really been the opposite of a servant leader. He may have started out wishing to serve, but then it became about him. Even though he was considered one of the most successful generals in history, he wasn't a servant. In the times of the apostles, we are in the early Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, of course, happened after the fall of the Roman Republic. Julius Caesar famously left his service as a Roman leader when he crossed the Rubicon and brought his armies south into the Italian peninsula. The Roman emperors, well, you can read Suetonius if you want a history of the first several and how they had many failings. There is also a famous TV show that was on several years ago, I, Claudius, which delves into the Roman Emperor Claudius, well played by Sir Derek Jacobi. These are not examples we wish to follow. We wish to follow the example of Christ. We wish to be disciples of Christ, and therefore we wish to be servant leaders. No matter our state in life, whether we have a position of authority in the church, whether we have positions of authority in secular society, we should always be other-focused. If we think about it, many of the evils that have happened in our world is when people who have secular roles of authority have not been servant leaders. In fact, like Napoleon, some of them were emperors and kings. Others, even worse, as dictators. They've started wars, caused famines, and persecuted people. This example of servant leadership that Jesus is sending out his apostles to teach them how to be servants before they can lead is really what we should all be thinking about in our state in life. Not all of us have authority. Some of us have authority in civil society, but some of us are employees. We are directed by others. So how can we be servants and servant leaders if we are dealing with what someone is asking us to do? This is the second part of this gospel. The reading that I read before of the first part of the gospel, the second meaning could be, cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, drive out demons. If you think about that, they were tending to the needs of people. How can we cleanse lepers if leprosy is now more treatable by antibiotics and most of us are not infectious disease specialists or microbiologists? Think about where those people who've been cast aside as lepers were. What are we doing to help those who are marginalized? I'll say more about that in a little bit. Drive out demons. Well, all of us in Georgetown know about The Exorcist. And let's think about, do we really want to be involved in what the priest in that movie and others experienced and did? I don't think so. But are there demons in our society that we can drive out? Is there hatred? Is there violence? Is there lack of forgiveness? Is there lack of humility? Are not those demonic? Are not those things that oppress people as those who are possessed are? Can we not work to make society better, our families better, our friends, our co-workers better from dealing with those oppressions? To return to the lepers, those on the marginalized parts of society. If you sit and reflect, we will find that sometimes we feel marginalized, and often we forget to think about those who are marginalized. Sometimes it is our own situations that cause us to be marginalized. They may not be our fault, but sometimes there are situations that we put ourselves into and we're afraid to ask for forgiveness or to ask to be included. There are other times when people have wanted to be included, whether they were returning to society or whether they've been struggling with issues that causes them to be disengaged. And do we put up barriers for them? Do we continue their marginalization? We have to think about, what are we doing to bring them back, to bring ourselves back, to bring back family members, co-workers, strangers? What do we do as society, as a nation? Are we enacting policies both domestically and internationally that help those who are marginalized, help those who are poor, help those who do not have enough clean water or access to good food, help those who are in areas where munitions such as mines and cluster bombs can be a threat to them? Are there situations where they could be in war? Is there a threat of rape, of kidnapping, threat of violence that comes in the night? Around the world, this happens everywhere. It happens in our nation. And in every time that we experience these things, we should act for justice and to help people's situations become better. There's a lot that marginalizes people. And to help with those who are marginalized, to help when we are marginalized, we need to find out where people are to hear their situations. I close today with the thought of the largest consultation of humans that has ever happened in history. that is the current synod that we are a part of. And in that, members of our parish, members of our archdiocese, members of our community will be listening to others and hearing the stories, their thoughts, their hopes, and their fears, and asking, what do you wish to say? Not telling them this is what you need to hear, but asking them to speak. We've listened to each other in our own parish synod consultations. We've had gatherings in our archdiocese. And now, as they have progressed nationally and internationally, they are gathering in Rome to hear others speak and to let their voices be heard. I do not know where this will lead the church. There are some who are fearful. There are some who are very hopeful. And there are some who think, well, everything must change, whether they fear it or whether they wish it. I don't know what will happen. But I do know that, like the apostles, we are asked to do this by Christ. We are going without walking sticks. We are going without sandals. That can be scary. But remember, without cost we have received, and without cost we are to give. And that means God took care of those apostles. God took care of the early disciples and the early members of the church, and God will take care of us. It may be scary. It may be times when we're uncertain, but it is always a walk with God.